Tangential Convergence is yet another Thunderbird 6 podcast.
Dun, 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 dun.
All right. I think we are. Good. Okay, so welcome to episode 22 of Tangential Convergence from here in my basement in Sault Ste. Marie. We actually, as you can hear with the excellent sound, we have now gone back to microphones with a complicated process, a complicated setup, which I will take a picture of and use as the album art. I'll take a picture of it with my new iPhone, which I'm so, you know, awesome, because I got one of these 4 years after they came out.
Bandwagon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm not a bandwagon. I'm just not a first generation. What am I saying? Of course I am.
Yes.
Did you get a picture of me there, Dave?
I got a picture mostly of the mic. You want a picture of you? I can take a picture of you. The light's pretty poor in here, but I can.
And we have this carbon rod.
And the duck.
Huzzah to the carbon rod.
Man, Times Man of the Year.
That's right. So we were. In fact, I came down. I got the Jesus phone on Saturday, and I came down to see Robin and Ken to show them because that's what I do.
That's right.
I was showing them the fact that when you took a picture, it sort of geotagged the picture, and it, if you looked in the Get Info on a Mac, you actually see where the picture was taken. So that got me thinking, got us thinking about the whole idea of sort of location and location applications and all these kind of things.
Lord Vader, your obscure references to the Los Angeles real estate market have not got you any closer to discovering the location of the secret rebel base.
What is that?
Sorry, it's Family Guy. Yeah, I'm sorry.
What, you get Family Guy texts to your phone?
No, I'm actually turned GPS on the BlackBerry.
I wonder what his OS is, because he's in that suit with all the, like, I mean, there's obviously a computer at work.
Yeah.
But anyway,
that's just magic. Question. It's George Lucas. It's not science fiction. It's science fantasy, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And there's not much science involved. Never been a big Star Wars fan. But
cheers to Dave.
Well, yeah, because I like real science fiction.
Yeah. I love Arthur C. Clarke. He's my best science fi guy.
I mean, there's been such great stuff, and I mean, even this recent games, the Mass Effect series are just incredible.
You mean you don't go in for sci-fi operas where the brothers and sisters kiss each other?
Maybe the sisters.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
And where everything is a rip-off of another story. Kind of like Avatar, which I liked a lot better when it was Last in the Mohicans and the Indians weren't blue.
that's I've heard that, yeah. I liked it better.
I loved that. Daniel Day-Lewis and Madeline Stowe.
Yeah, I liked it much better when it was called Dances with Wolves. Yeah. You know. Dances with Blue
or
People.
Or Kevin Dances with himself.
That's right.
But he plays himself in every movie he's in.
Yes.
Because he basically just plays, Kevin Bacon, Kevin Costner in every movie he's in.
Plays middle-aged white guy.
Yeah, that's right. He used to play younger white guy.
Yeah.
I have a funny story about him, but I'm too behind the eight ball to tell it.
You're behind the eight ball?
I'm behind the
eight ball.
Well, that's a great tie-in because we're talking about...
Location. So that's where you are.
In the globe.
If we were using Foursquare right now, you would be the mayor of the eight ball.
That's right. Or the space behind it.
That's right.
That's right. Which is usually a hole in the table. And so there's Robin in a hole on the table. Waiting for the eight ball to fall on his head.
We were thinking about this stuff and how, I mean, this is quickly becoming. In fact, there was an article on TechCrunch today saying that this isn't a war between, say, Gowalla and Foursquare. It's a gold rush and everybody's going to win. Because, of course, they can then deliver location-based ads. You're walking down the street, you got your iPhone out, and then an ad maybe pops up and says, Dave, I see you do a lot of Google searching for Chinese restaurants. Here's one now.
So, Dave, give us some context. Tell us about Foursquare.
I signed up for it just so I could get my username because I don't like people stealing D. Broadbeck my username. but I really haven't used it. Because I'd be the king of Algoma University by now because I'm probably the only person at the university using it.
That's right.
But what happens is you find out where you are. Like, it finds out where you are. And you sort of check in at places.
That's interesting.
Okay. So, and some businesses have set up, for example...
So it's like having a wife.
Yeah, it's a lot like having a wife. And
Not all wives are made equal, though.
Well, that's, anyway. I think that's true. But all people are created equal.
So they say.
But
oh, David.
Yes, I didn't say, I mean equal rights, I don't mean equal abilities.
Oh, David.
But the thing is, what happens then, of course, is then the whole world, like if you put it on, if you link it to your Twitter account or your Facebook, everyone knows where you are all the time. So thank the God. Issue then is...
Assuming you have those accounts back, go ahead.
But I mean, people that are using Foursquare use Facebook and Twitter. I mean,
yeah. Right, sure.
So what ends up happening is people are telling the world where they are, and there's this new website, it's called robmeplease, I think, .com. Because it shows where when people are away from their houses.
Nice.
Sort of, and cool. I don't think they're trying to help people rob, but what they're trying to do is point out that you're telling everybody where you are all the time, idiot. Yeah.
Yes.
And I've thought about that. When I go into a conference, I don't Twitter that I'm at, that I'm away from home. I don't do that. I might say that I'm at, that I might tag it with something, but I don't explicitly say,
I'm in Toronto and my wife's at home alone with our children.
I think that's ridiculous and people do it.
And I think that that brings us right to the crux of the point in terms of geotagging. You know, you don't tell people that. Why not, Dave? How come you don't tell people that?
Because I don't want, there's an off chance, and it's not much of one, but there's an off chance that there's some freak out there that says, oh, Broadbeck, and then they can find my address, that's true. Right. They can then decide they're going to rob my house.
Right, and so...
They can then decide they're going to come and take the air out of the tires of our car.
Right, and so...
They'd never do that if I was home.
No. Unless they're students. But so, of all the information you have, your personal information, probably, and this is what I think about when I think about geotagging, is... Probably the single most important piece of information about yourself is where you are.
I think that's true.
And, I mean, let's face it, intelligence agencies, governments, they spend billions of dollars a year paying police agencies and law enforcement agencies. And what do they do?
They find
most
you.
Of their job is to find you.
Yeah.
You think of the money they've laid out on CCTV networks in the UK.
You bet.
I remember reading a book written by a guy who had the deputy head of British or MI5 in the UK, and he's talking about going to an island, which I can't remember the name of, or a former British colony after the Second World War. And they're
That's
tracking
most of
guys
the islands
down,
then, right?
Yeah.
That's most of them. And they're tracking down guys... so that he can be killed, right? They're leaders of independence movements and so forth and so on. And his job is to locate them and kill them. And where he doesn't kill them, but despite what Hollywood pretends, you know, in terms of eliminating people, quote unquote, it's not shooting them. It's not the shoot up that matters. The hard part is finding them.
Mm.
Once you find them, you know, of course, Western nation states have the guys to go in and take them out. That's no big deal. Right,
or Russia just poisons their soup.
Or poisons their soup with radiation.
Yeah.
But the point is, his job and the reason he left MI5 was he's, you know, sitting down there using radio direction finding to locate the transmitter that these guys were using to broadcast their propaganda, and he realized, you know, hey, I'm an assassin. Right? I do 99% of the work of an assassin. And what's that work?
Finding
the guy.
Yeah.
And I mean, and this is the thing, and the interesting thing is now that people are freely sharing this.
Mm-hmm.
And
which
like I said,
makes them idiots.
And if I was at a conference or something, and I wanted to meet up with people, I'd probably use the Foursquare app, and I'd say, like, you know, I'm at this bar right now, and it would go on my Twitter feed, because maybe I want people to meet with me and hang out, right? Because I'm lonely and I have no friends. But... You know, I can see it being useful there, as far as, you know, just meeting up with people. Where do you guys want? If people are looking for a place for dinner, there's
Dave,
a lot
Chinese
of tables
again?
Here. That's right. That's right. And the ad comes up.
That's right.
So I mean, and of course, the way they're going to monetize it is by ads. It's got to be. How do you monetize anything? So I can see the use for it, but I see a lot of people on Twitter that have their exact latitude and longitude always as their location in their Twitter profile.
That's insane.
And it comes directly from their iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dave, what do you think about that when you see that? Like, what's
I think,
your
why are you
response?
Telling me that? My response is I wouldn't share that much with people. I share a lot of my life online. I really do. Not all of it. There's a lot of it I keep to myself. But, you know, when some of it's mundane, but some of it's, I guess, got some value. But I don't tell people always where I am exactly. Like, I mean, I just don't. I find that more of an invasion of my privacy, let's say.
Mm.
A potential one, then I do something like, saying that going to what I think is another pointless meeting, and I do that all the time. Mm-hmm. I Twitter that.
Yeah.
And but I mean, I'm also, it's something I'd say to people anyway.
I walk
into the meetings and say, I think this is a pointless meeting.
I go to the pointless meeting and I put a little card in front of myself that says, this is a pointless meeting.
There you go. Yeah. I like that. Yeah. That's kind of like Twittering on a really local scale.
Exactly. I show up with one of those little like balls attached to a paddle with a rubber band.
Oh, paddle ball.
Yeah,
paddle
ball. That's good.
Yeah. That's how I express that thought.
But I mean, this got me, and we were thinking about this when we had our little meeting about my phone. I was showing you guys my phone the other day. Because it gets you thinking about, I mean, the obvious one is Minority Report, right? You're walking down the street, everyone mm-hmm. knows where you are, they know your
proclivities. This is it. This is
and they're just firing ads at you. Hey, Ken.
Yeah.
You like blow up sex dolls? Why don't you?
And he does, people, ladies and gentlemen.
What's not?
I just wish you'd take them out of the office.
That's right. Clean them every once in a while.
Why are they in the archives, Ken?
That's right.
So Ken thinks he has more of a bigger staff in the library.
That's
it's got nothing to do with them being blow up sex dolls. He just wants more people working in the library.
We just shift them around every once in a while. Yeah. Make it look like they're doing stuff.
We were gonna, if we didn't hire Keo this year, we were going to have to just have one of those dolls sitting in that office.
Nice.
But I mean, that's the obvious one. Mm-hmm. But there's always this, like, think on Star Trek. They always know where somebody is because they can track their communicator. Unless the story demands that they can't track them, then suddenly there's some sort of ion storm.
That's right. And that's so quaint, too, considering, you know, you see something like Casino Royale, and you can already, like, tag someone with a little transmitter.
Yeah.
In the 24th century, it requires this gold badge on your chest.
Yeah.
Like, they wouldn't have barcodes stamped on their heads. Or
like, they wouldn't do what they did in the episode Patterns of Force, where they put those two subdermal transducers underneath Spock and Kirk.
Yeah.
You know, the Nazi Planet episode, right?
Yes.
So, yeah. And of course, they take them out to make the little laser beam to knock the door off. Mm-hmm.
Oh, for God's sake.
I showed that episode to Maddie, because she hadn't watched a lot of the original series. And,
oh, really?
Yeah, and she said, does every Star Trek have a Nazi episode? And I thought, and I said, I think everyone but Next Generation.
Pretty much, yes.
Because Voyager did.
Mm-hmm.
Enterprise did.
Yeah.
Did DS9?
It might have.
A Nazi episode? They had, they had the Cardassians coming in and acting all heavy, you know.
Yeah, but they weren't actual Nazis. I'm talking actual Nazis. With the swastikas and the black uniforms and the jack boots.
I don't know.
So I don't think DS9. DS9 and TNG didn't.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Anyway, that was a bit of a... That was tangential.
Yes, it was.
So, I mean...
Where's Isabella going?
I don't know. She's free to come and go as she pleases.
She's here, everybody. Don't worry. Everybody,
hey,
be very quiet.
If people know where you were and they said... Hey, you're guilty of this crime, but you can prove where you were. Isn't that cool?
Well, that could be an...
That is cool.
Or, for example, if you're Governor Mark Sanford in South Carolina and you're going to see your Brazilian mistress...
You just take your
staff
phone...
staff would then know where you were.
Or you take your phone and hire some hobo to just take it into the woods in South Carolina.
That's right.
That's
but
true.
Actually, there was a guy... This is about two, 3 months ago. There's been a couple of cases. One where a guy... you know, one of America's dumbest criminals kind of things, where the guy actually goes to, he robs a house, but while he's there, he checks his Facebook status and lets himself log in. So
nice.
That's great. The other one, isn't that great?
Yes.
On the other hand, there was a guy who was wrongfully charged.
Mm-hmm.
And then they found, he said, I got proof that I wasn't even there. Check, I updated my Facebook status and they'll have the IP address.
Yeah.
They checked, he updated it from home.
Uh-huh.
And he lives alone.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like he had like his dad do it or something.
Right.
So he lives at home, and it ended up that they just they said, "Well, that's pretty good evidence you weren't there. If you were updating your house, and the only way to get in that house, you know, you're the only one with the key, etc." So he actually ended up getting out. Now, the charges were dropped.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't enough evidence, and clearly there was evidence there that he wasn't. You know, then again, he could have had a buddy just do it, you know, sit outside his house and steal his Wi-Fi. But,
tunneled in from the...
Yeah, just VPN.
Yeah, exactly.
Turns out this guy's like elite hacksaw.
That's right.
So I don't know. I mean, that's... What do you think, Robin? I mean, what do you think about... Well, you've said what you think, right? That it's pretty valuable and it can lead to assassinations.
Well, I think the two most important pieces of information that I really like to conceal from people on the internet... is one, my name for real, and two, my location.
Mm.
And
right.
those are the two things. And the only reason I want to conceal my name is because if you know my name, you can find my location. And I really think it's a really oppressive thing. When you came into my office and we were talking about, you know, all the features of your iPhone and how it could track you and you could track it and, you know, yada, yada, yada. It just made me afraid. You know, the government spends so much money, spending so many people and training them so well just so that they can find people. And now, all you know, all we need to do to catch Osama bin Laden is email or is mail him a Android phone. And that's it. We got him.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Think about all those guys who are out there with, like, predator drones and satellites and, you know, radio monitoring equipment and all that stuff. It can all just go away because we have geotagging.
Oh, yeah. And in fact, the video I'm streaming live to the internet right now is geotagged.
Uh-oh.
So, I mean, and that's that exactly. That's the kind of thing.
This is why I will never geotag anything ever. I mean, your anonymity is so important. Hey, everybody, I like being a number, okay? I don't like it when people know who I am. I learned that in university.
I am not a number.
I am a free man. And I love it. And you know why I'm a free man? I'm a free man because I am a number.
You're only a free man because no one's decided to put you in prison.
That's right.
Dude. and the only people who could do that are sitting in this room right now.
with what we know.
I'm holding the sap.
with our vast resources of law enforcement behind us?
Yes.
That's right.
I'm a citizen's arrest for going off and ranting too much on my podcast. That's a new charge.
My friends, I am armed.
I have the Union Corps outside.
I'm carrying a sap right now, which is, if you've ever seen a Gestapo movie, the Gestapo guys always carry a sap. It's like a short, like, 6-inch little rod of whatever, and it hurts a lot. And so,
and it hurts a lot. on so many levels.
See, it's German. It's 6 inches long. Yeah, it hurts
it's
a lot.
It's German from the 40s.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, you don't want to mess with it. That's all you got to know. But no, I mean, seriously, I like being a number because it gives you power. You can say what you really think. You don't have to worry about it coming back to you. And
I'm gonna be the devil's advocate here, otherwise known as the asshole.
Okay, that's my usual role.
Well,
thank you for Isabel's cracking up over there. There's so many things people out there you just don't know about us.
But, well, there's, you know, in some ways it's the ease and facility.
Never seen me at work.
There's a threshold beyond which it does seem scary because, of course, if you're sending letters, analog mail, you are geotagging yourself because you have a return address on it.
I never thought of that. That's a good point, Ken.
No, only if you put a return address
on it. Only if you put a return address on it. Of course, you
hence,
can,
the success of the mail or of the that bomber.
Or the Unabomber.
The Unabomber.
Yeah, well, yeah. True. Of course, you can anonymize
not to
email.
Mention the anthrax bomber in the States in the early 2000s, who was never caught.
No, he killed himself.
Right.
No, they confirmed that it was him.
Yeah.
The scientist who killed himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, they confirmed it was him. He was like, he had become completely unhinged.
Yeah, I have issues with that. Anyway, go on.
All right. So I guess my thing would be it's like other aspects of social networking in that there seems to be a new level of how much people are willing to share with one another and find acceptable to share. There's also a phenomenon, too, that some people are discussing in social networks and may apply here is that when people are able to sort of establish their identity in a social network and they want to make something private, they do take it off the, you know, the main site or use the tools in social networking that keep it more strictly sort of one-on-one interactions rather than, you know, just exposing
right.
to the whole world. So, I mean, I think that, you know, there's always sort of been geotagging, and, you know, the best records we have are, you know, often because someone was prolific at, you know, some form of, you know, geotagging in a sense, whether it's letters or, you know, other correspondence or journals or other types of
information. Do you think that's a historical thing? I mean, people would address a letter from where they are because they're usually writing a letter because they're proud of where they are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
There's some aspect of that.
But also, I mean, they're doing it purposely.
Yeah, and they're doing it prolifically. And yeah. That's why. It's,
yeah, but there's a difference between being somebody who is.
True. True, I know what you're, yeah.
Yeah, who's trying to evade persecution, and somebody who's saying, hey, King of Spain, yeah, I'm on, you know, I'm in the Caribbean because I discovered it for you.
Yeah.
And I just want to make sure you know that because, yeah, I'm in the New World. And so, yeah, I'm going to put that that return address on it. You know, Santiago is going to be right there on that on return
address. The other side of all this is, you know, going from the privacy side is, for the longest time, these kinds of skills to determine where you actually are, very difficult to, first of all, discover, learn, transmit, propagate. Dave's filming beer bottles.
I'm not filming them, I'm streaming them.
I'm streaming
beer bottles live to the internet.
Live, beer. So now...
Stay tuned for the striptease.
So, in many ways, you know, the idea of a map is information applied to terrain, right? That creates the idea of geography.
Sure.
And now almost, you know, for lack of a better expression, almost any idiot could do what, you know, someone like a Champlain... You know, would have found difficult.
Any idiot can do what Champlain did. That's awesome. I love that. It's a great line. It's true.
But with greater specificity,
is it yes. True?
Well,
you're not going to discover anything brand new, Robin. But I mean, Champlain could say, "I'm here and here. I'm drawing this map, and I'm doing the best I can." Whereas we can use Google Earth.
Yeah. And go, I'm here.
Right well, now. Yeah, and that's, yeah. But that's not even a contest. That's like saying, you know what? It's like going up to, I don't know, like Paul Revere and going, yeah, well, I can drive my Mustang a lot faster than you can drive, you know, a lot faster than you can go riding around on your horse. I mean, a technological advantage. That's
no, but think about space exploration. We'll be able to, though, of course, you couldn't get GPS in space, but we're going to be able to pinpoint where people are exactly.
We can do that now, apparently, according to what you said in my office.
No, we can do that here, but I'm saying even if someone does split, the best sort of analog of you know, somebody like Champlain is someone going to Mars.
But, you know, even if you look at the Champlain example drawing maps of sort of newly discovered, at least by European areas, there are still areas. I mean, we're taking part in the Ontario Geospatial Data Exchange now at the university. We're getting faculty members who are asking for things like water boundary files and that sort of thing from the Data Liberation Initiative. And there's still a lot of mapping to be done of traditional stuff, which is becoming much easier to do and much more detailed. But also those other layers, you know, of this, the idea of taking of geotagging and using it for health information and using it for historical information, the whole GIS phenomenon. It's like, it's sort of like the ability to draw a type of, or map a type of, any type of information seems, at least for humans, to make it, and it always probably has, infinitely more usable or easier for us to grasp than tables of numbers or whatever, or coordinates or whatever.
Right. I mean, think about, we just, in fact, the university just hired a research chair in health informatics, and a lot of that's about, I mean, in the job interview, I jokingly said to the person, so basically what you do is you make those maps that plot where the zombies are going, right?
That's right.
And she said, yeah, that's sort of what I do.
And I've been working this week with the institute to sort of, you know, check over the resources that the chair and the research institute will need. And there's just a huge number of even just health informatics journals now. But, I mean, you can apply that concept, which, you know, we're using fancy terms like informatics or GIS, but it's new technology being applied to essentially a very old idea of how do we connect bits of information scattered across a terrain in an understandable way?
Yeah, that's
whether
right.
you're a Roman building roads to connect an empire.
Yeah,
but one of the things in this exact sense is I know a guy who works for NATO, and his job is to create levels of complexity in terms of things like Google World to make sure you can't see things like NATO bases in Afghanistan. On, you know, and make sure that when you click a link that says this is where Camp Victory is in Iraq, it's not actually right.
Right.
And part of this is, I imagine it's pretty simple to screw it up. Well, I mean, I've looked enough at it to know that it's just a tag, and yeah. you can mess with it really easily.
Right.
And I don't know. That's not really a counterpoint to what you're saying. And
no, but it's,
I'm just throwing it in there. But
it's, no, but it's also. But it, I think that illuminates historically the idea too. If you even look to Columbus and the argument over the big Earth versus the small Earth argument, like how far around the world do you have to go to hit the other side, essentially?
Right.
Which is, you know, the difference between life or death when you're on a ship.
Yeah. Well, we know that Bugs Bunny proved that.
Exactly. He threw that baseball around yeah. and then showed it to Columbus, and Columbus went bananas.
The world, she's around.
Flat. She's a flat, like your head. But it points to the information, like, these are things that are highly susceptible, and even goes back to the German 6-inch...
Unit
talk we had before, but the idea of a bureaucracy so or systems or bureaucracies so wedded to information that all in order to fool the system, you can either manipulate it or you simply go off the not simply but you go off the grid,
right?
If the paperwork or the electronic records don't exist, then that thing must not exist. The example being Star Wars. Episode 2, Attack of the Clones.
Right.
I'm so glad we're using a fiction here.
God damn Jedi archivist and librarian who has cast shame upon our professions by saying that if it wasn't in the archives, then it must not exist.
Right.
And thousands of librarians and archivists cringed around the world. It was just an awful thing to say.
Well, that was just an awful movie.
Well,
so,
yeah, I know. It's
worst time.
In the movie, one of my... I mean, I know there's a few things I always come back with, too, right? Tentacle for Leibowitz and Rollerball. And in the movie Rollerball, one of the original, not the horrible 2002 remake, when Jonathan Ea is trying to find out what happened during the corporate wars. Mm. He just wants to know. Because nobody talks about it anymore.
Right.
So he goes to Geneva, where they have this computer that has all the world's knowledge. Mm-hmm. And he runs into the archivist at the library, who's an old British guy. Of course he is.
Yeah.
And he says, it's quite funny. Today we lost the 13th century. It's just gone. Because, of course, they're just, it's a totalitarian corporatist state, and they're taking stuff out, right?
Right.
But also...
13th century is so controversial, too.
Yeah. Well, but that wasn't the point. He said they literally had lost it. It wasn't taken down by somebody, from the energy corporation that, of course, ran the Houston team. God, I watched that movie too often. It was just that literally, if it wasn't in the archives, there it is again. Mm-hmm. But of course, they removed it. Mm-hmm. It was literally, it was gone. It was the only place they had the knowledge, was that one place, and all the knowledge was basically had been wiped everywhere else.
Yeah.
All just centralized there.
And historically, you can see this happening when South Africa, the state, the secret police, putting false records into the archival record against members of the African National Congress. You also see it in the age of James II, ousting 1688, Glorious Revolution.
Right.
The French archives hold a whole bunch of fabricated documents on Marlborough and the others that helped to boot him out.
Right.
Governments lie, and we know that. Yep. And they lie in their archives, too.
Yep.
And where are we going with geolocation here?
Well, the idea that, so this is really easy, it's a huge technological leap forward, it's allowing us to map all sorts of kinds of information to help us understand it better, but at the same time, which has been an age-old sort of goal, but at the same time, there's the age-old dangers. I mean, there's age-old dangers of the loss of privacy, of, status control, of things being fabricated or omitted on purpose to basically mislead the citizenry or whatever.
And geotagging is no different. Said, you can make it up if you want.
You certainly can't fake it. I mean, it's not like it's impossible. It's totally
a tag.
Doable.
It's a tag. Well, just like a table
it's
tag.
It's metadata in a file is right now.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a tag, and you can make the tag say anything you want. That's as long as it is constrained within the bounds of the planet Earth in terms of longitude and latitude.
That's why...
You can make anything happen, but that,
Well, that's why Antarctica and Middle Earth are more mapped in Wikipedia than
I know.
Than the continent of Africa.
Crazy.
Yep.
But I know I and I'm being and everybody I've quit drinking pretty much. And so that
pretty
means,
much. Like, I just quit drinking.
Well, pretty much. And that means two glasses get me totally destroyed. I had two small glasses, not even full wine glasses, of red wine before coming, so I'm just wrecked. But
so that's how you quit drinking. You just drink.
Well,
less.
I didn't quit drinking, but I quit drinking like an academic.
I see that I understand.
All right.
Yeah, all right. Yes. Exactly.
Quit drinking like the 30-year veteran of an academic library with the whiskey bottle in his desk drawer.
Line up the alcohol. It's like academic, Marine Corps,
Engineer.
And anyway, so I'm not thinking very clearly, but I really think it's pretty compelling, the idea that, you know, sort of the holy grail of government control is locating people.
Yeah.
That's what they do. What's an APB? Like, what do the cops do when they're looking for somebody? I mean, let me just put CSI.
They just Twitter it.
They just don't grab some ethnic minority.
It's pretty much what they do, actually. Right,
sorry.
But, you know, think about CSI. Think about, you know, all these things. I mean, all this stuff is dedicated to finding people.
Yep.
And now, Dave, he's not doing us justice, because when he came into my office, man, he blew me away. And
I just assumed you knew this.
Well, I think you should give our listeners a taste of that, man, because it blew me away.
Taste of what?
Well, just what you were saying, just like, you know, how, you know, you can use your phone to, like you're talking about, man.
Well, I mean, the thing is,
I'm drunk, dude. Come on, let's talk to you now.
but I think that the thing that surprised me, and I mean, I'm pretty technologically savvy, but I hadn't had a smartphone before.
Mm-hmm.
But you're talking about how the phone can like send you advertisements and knows where you are.
Well, there's talk of free phones without contracts coming out that just they push you ads.
Yeah.
I mean, think about this. What about if Google could give you a free Android phone, no contract, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, what if they give you free talk time, free messaging, and free data?
Dog tag.
But all they do is when they know where you are, before you answer the phone, before you get the phone, the call, you pick it up, and it says, first thing you hear is a 5-second ad for, let's say you're at the university, you hear a 5-second ad for our tremendous cafeteria.
Dude.
I use the word tremendous and cafeteria actually both quite loosely. I mean, or for example, you hear an ad for Algoma University. You hear a quick ad, you know, registration still open for the following programs. Blah, 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 blah. And then I have to wait 5 seconds. They and then it's like, oh, hi, Isabel. Yeah, I'll pick up some milk.
They do it through your web browser. There's no reason why they can't do it through your phone.
Of course. Well, it's Google AdSense. Yeah.
This appears too in Neal Stephenson's The Diamond Age. You get those as you're walking down the street, large media glyphs. They actually dispense with words. You're just down to media glyphs as a language.
Right.
You know, the whole retina scan, who you are, and what your past behavior's been and where you are to just push stuff at you.
And I mean, I think that is the kind of thing that, I mean, it's a shift. I think some of the stuff is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that it's going to be a matter of us adjusting to it the same way we adjusted to there being ads on television, ads on the radio. The difference here is they're going to be aimed at you.
True.
Well, I mean, there's a great moment in the game Mass Effect where you go up and you record an ad to get a deal at a kiosk where you're buying weapons.
Right.
You record this ad, and then throughout the space station, you hear, "I'm Commander John Shepard. I save the Earth. And my favorite weapon kiosk is..." Now, whenever you walk up to you can choose to see an ad, another ad.
Yeah.
So you walk up to it, and it knows what your character's been doing, and it says, "Hey, Shepard, drink a lot last night? Maybe you need a hangover cure."
Nice.
So, and of course, they've just written a game like that. BioWare just... Man, thank you, BioWare, for that whole universe. But they do... I think that's probably going to happen. I don't think the ads constantly beamed at us are going to happen, but I think with things like augmented reality, and that's going to happen. There's already people talking about. Think about this, and this tech is already in existence. You would have to opt into this.
Right, it's a spaghetti strainer. It's got wires on it.
It's a tinfoil hat.
Right. Okay.
But you opt in and you say yes, whoever you can have a picture of my face and tag it. Now, when I walk down the street and I'm wearing these glasses, these augmented reality glasses on, it just does Ken Herndon.
Right.
And then it says, "Wife, Christine Herndon."
Mm-hmm.
"Daughter, Karis Herndon." Mm-hmm. And then it says, and it lists where you live, interests, what social networks you belong to.
Mm-hmm.
and I can then immediately have a conversation with you. Or, and it also says, Ken likes the following things, and so do you. Are you going to lunch? So what about Chinese?
You know? It's involuntary video dating through your phone.
Well, it's not, but it's not even going to be, it's going to be through your damn, through goggles, or it's even going to be, I think it's probably just going to become
something that you just have. Bottom line is, the man knows where you are.
Yeah, and that's part of the problem. No, that's true.
Yes, it goes beyond the Victorian calling card.
Yeah, with the old Foley file, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, but
that's called a Foley file.
The idea. What does that mean about security and like just Relative. Privacy?
Yeah, how do you mean?
Well, privacy, like the the G knows where I am, man. Mm-hmm.
I demand my privacy.
You think they don't know? You think the government doesn't know where you are?
They can't tell where I am right now.
Not right now, but they know roughly where you are. I'll tell you, Robin. If they needed you, if for some reason the RCMP needed to find you.
You're right.
They could find you.
I have a story from a friend of mine who was like, she came into
she's
to
in Gitmo Ontario.
She's not in Gitmo. Close, though. And she's she came in from Nova Scotia, mm-hmm. found a place to live in Guelph, my hometown, and then went on a girl's drive out east, or out west, to Edmonton, BC. And it turns out that, so what she did was mailed some of her packages to her, to herself, to her new address. And one of them had a ticking sound in it. So the post office called the cops.
Of course.
And Good. The cops...
I'm glad they do things like that.
She had spent not more than 48 hours, not even in Guelph.
Yeah.
Somehow the Ontario police, within hours, managed to track her down to BC.
Sure.
They called her up and going, we got a package here, it's got your name on it, and it ticks. What the fuck?
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Right? And so, yeah, you're right. They can do that now. But I have a real problem with, like, when you're in my office, you're talking about how people can, like, say, this is the restaurant I'm in.
Yes. And it's Foursquare, yeah.
Right, Foursquare. And, you know, you're just sort of handing yourself over. Like, the cops at least had to work to track down Charlie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, no, and that is the other point, part of it. There is a time, if I can do this entirely voluntarily, I have no issue with it. I have none. If I can turn it off, if it's opt-in, opt-out... And I can opt in when I want to and opt out when I want to, I'm for it. Right. So, for example, if I'm walking down the street in Toronto, and I haven't walked the streets of Toronto, that sounds bad. I haven't, you know, let's not say Toronto.
I've spent a lot
of time there. But let's say I'm in Regina, where I've never been. Pick a Canadian city.
Okay.
And I'm walking down the street, and I don't know where the hell to go.
Right.
I open my phone up. I turn on the Google Maps. So I'm looking around. And again, it knows my search history,
right.
And it says,
"And I turn
this thing on,
right.
And it knows that it's local time about 6 o'clock, and it says hungry, looking for a Chinese place, Dave. You know, I see you like Szechuan and Hunan food.
It says, hey sailor, new in town.
Yeah, that's right. I see you traveling alone. You need some companionship." And then James Whittingham shows up, Isabel. That was just for us. But
you have not purchased any Viagra.
Dave, is your stock of Viagra running low?
That's, well, think about that. Think about the spam, though. That's at the other end of it, right?
I know.
Which is that, I mean, there's text messaging spam, there's cell phone spam. Yep. As soon as you get to a big city, you start getting random phone calls. You've just won a cruise. It's like, well, but how do you even have this number?
That's right.
Or a text, right?
Yeah.
Or then again, it also doesn't work perfectly. Because, for example, yesterday I was in the library. Mm-hmm. And
our library.
Yeah, I was in the library.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
I got a text.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, what the hell's this? And it's from TELUS. And it says, welcome to the USA.
I know, I get that all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Because it thinks I'm in the States.
Yeah.
And then suddenly my damn phone hooks up to AT&T.
I know. Yeah. And suddenly you're roaming, whether you like to or not.
Well, I have data roaming turned off, so that wouldn't happen. And I had made a phone call, so I said, only ever connect to TELUS, and I'm fine.
Tell me where that spot was in the library, so then I could buy a Kindle and hook up to the Sprint network.
Oh, well, actually, it's bottom floor, down, you know, where your office is, walk... out and keep going straight towards the go east, you know, and you get in that sort of almost not just before the stacks start on the right wall.
Okay,
right. Just and also just past Cirque on the first floor, just when you're turning into the doorway to go down,
yeah,
like that first doorway,
really
right there.
Well, you can get a Kindle in Canada now.
I know. before. That was always the thing, though.
Yeah.
You'd figure out where you stood on the shore of Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, to see if you could hook up the Sprint.
Well, the number of times back when we first moved here, and of course, when we were in Corner Brook, we had a TELUS as well phone, and it was never an issue of hooking up to anybody else's towers. I moved here, and I got this my first phone bill, and it was like for $193. And I called TELUS, and I said, I'm getting these international roaming charges. Yeah. Well, you must have been in the United States. And I said, nope.
Nope.
Oh, and I said, I'm in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. First of all, make do this to your phone, and also we'll just turn that off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, we'll just make sure here's how you turn it off, and we'll reverse those charges.
Because airtime actually really doesn't cost anything. It's just a license to print money.
Oh, of course it is.
Yeah.
It's just airtime costs them. You're using up a channel.
Yeah.
But anyway, two channels. But you're
chill.
I know. He's shrill, is it over here?
No, shill. You're shill. A shill for the company.
I'm a shill for the company.
For the man. No,
who bought you?
That's the way cell phones work, dude. Sorry, man.
Who bought you? Who bought you, Robert? Where did you go wrong?
They got to him.
They got to him.
The cell phone people got to
him. They found him and then they got to him.
Cult of the Dead Cow bought me.
Oh, God.
Go ahead, sir. Sorry, Rob.
But, like Dave was talking about, you know, you have all these things on your phone. It's like your phone is like a vector for where you are.
Mm. That's exactly what it is. Yeah,
mm-hmm. You know, and people, you know, it's more dangerous than your computer. You know, people talk about surfing and stuff. No, but seriously,
No.
Your computer's got software. You can install a firewall and you can install anti-spamware on your computer that protects you from this kind of thing. You can't do that on your phone. Your phone's like a back door right into where you are.
No, that's true. That's true. I mean, phone OSs either are not open or the open ones are.
They sure as hell don't have an antivirus.
No, and if that will be.
Yeah.
I imagine that, and there have been cases of sort of Bluetooth viruses skipping.
There's no firewall on your phone.
No, you're right. You're right.
There's not a firewall app yet. There's millions of apps. The apps.
There's an app for that. Don't need firewalls because they don't ever go wrong, and everybody loves them.
That's not true, and we've all.
No one's ever going to hurt somebody who runs an Apple application.
Well, of course, Apple.
That's right. That'd be like hurting a bunny or something.
Exactly.
Like, a big, scary bunny.
Giving, you know, Steve that can Jobs make you disappear. Space.
Market Nobody capitalization is greater than that of BMW. But okay.
That's right.
Yeah.
Can you had brought a book with you. What was that all about? Because the library guy brings a book.
I brought Champlain's Dream by David Hackett Fisher, winner of the Pulitzer Prize.
Oh, very nice. Wrote
Paul Revere's
Ride.
It's
very pretty, everybody. It's a very pretty
book. It's a very pretty book. It's a very good book, actually. A very interesting book. But one of the things about it, of course, living in North America, we, with, at least from the European perspective, we had this giant age of discovery, right?
Right.
And one of the things just was interesting was for a time, Champlain worked at the Louvre when it was still a palace under Henry IV. And Henry IV was fascinated by maps, globes, and the new cartography.
Ah.
And he sponsored a great atlas called the Théâtre Français, which carefully mapped every province in the kingdom for the first time. The king also founded a geographic and hydrographic museum that boasted six huge maps of France, the continents, the oceans. He created a center in the Louvre below the Grand Gallery for the development of skills that would be useful in exploration, discovery, and colonization around the world. Experts in astronomy, surveying, cartography, navigation, and geography worked there. So it was all, of course, you know, in aid of the man.
Mm-hmm. There's a huge difference. He's talking about a new mathematical way of projecting a three-dimensional object on a two-dimensional surface.
Yep.
We're talking about locating an individual.
Yeah.
And that's a different thing.
Yeah, but
they're also talking about the individual being able to locate themselves on the...
Yeah,
on the globe.
Yeah, but that's okay. But at the same time, I mean, if it's on your phone,
I know.
And there's no real security on your phone.
Yeah, it's clearly very different. But it's the sort of, you know, Genesis 400 years later.
It's the 17th century equivalent, though. I mean,
I disagree. There's a wider leap here than just better ways of projecting a three-dimensional.
I'm not denying that there's a difference, but I'm saying that with what they had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you can never put yourself in those people's heads. It's like trying to think like an alien.
But you look at what they're trying to pull together.
Yeah,
all those different disciplines. It's an interdisciplinary effort to do something new with the specialist information each type of person has, and you're seeing that in a sense, at least. And I agree, it's not even sort of remotely completely analogous, but there are some similarities in that, you know, the idea of GIS or informatics is sort of, you know, it's in, it, unless it's got a specialization, it's essentially an interdisciplinary sort of neutral kind of effort.
It adds information to the dialogue. It's a new way of looking at geospatial information, but mm-hmm. there's a huge difference in going, how do I represent a coastline, mm-hmm. and how, okay, some guy has used his phone to search for bomb making.
Yeah,
and now I can.
No, no, that's it. Yeah, yeah. Of course, of course. Oh, yeah. No. There's no argument there. But as Isabel sort of jokingly said before, if you can map it, you can own it.
Yeah,
I don't know if they might. And
that's the whole point for Henry IV. If he can map it, then he can get to North America faster. In the book, in Champlain's Dream, one of the things that I wasn't aware of before I read it was Champlain, for a time, his uncle's ship got rented by the Spanish as part of their operations in their part of the New World, in the Caribbean, South America. And basically, they were so sort of, the Spanish Empire was so tight on keeping that cartographic information secret that you did need a pass to get in there. And if you weren't there for a reason, say you're another nationality, obviously, you know, trying to map the place or find out geographic data,
sure,
it'd kill you.
Do you know how they used to do it?
How they used to do
what as well?
With
the astrolab and the whole. Robin knows more about because he's kind of the sailor of the group here.
Yeah, well, what do you want to know?
But they had the
different
dead reckoning and
with visual cues.
Yeah, you use stars at night, the sun during the day. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and you have to know, and if you know where the, if you have a good chart of where the stars are, it's called an ephemeris table.
Right.
And you have a very good watch.
Well, so that's the key bit.
Yeah.
And if you know, you know what time it is, you then know your latitude and longitude on the planet.
Right.
An interesting side note, Tunisian desert ants.
Tunisian desert ants.
They navigate at night, of course, because in Tunisia, it's hot during the day. So they go out at night to eat. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the stars have changed position over the last even 10,000 years, which is a blip in evolutionary time. But they navigate through the stars by knowing what time it is and knowing where the stars are. In fact, they have what's basically an internal ephemeris table, and they have to learn this in their lifetime. Hmm. They have not been hardwired that way. They could not have been.
They learn it from preceding generations.
Yeah, they learn it basically, I think. People think by having the ants fall out. And, of course, what they do for these experiments is they time shift the ants, and then they put them in a lab that has a North Star in the wrong place.
Oh, jeez.
And then the ants actually sort of go to a different... Mm-hmm. They go in a different direction after foraging, like they think they're going home.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly where the time they think it is and where the star is. So we actually know that they navigate by the stars. Which is if that, you don't think that's cool, you don't know what cool science is.
And the time element is huge because, as we recall, not that long ago, we had the very good movie with Jeremy Irons and Michael Gambon. Right. Longitude, the book, based on the book, Longitude, which was the Parliament of the UK putting up money to solve the longitude problem and make a timepiece that would be accurate at sea.
Even at sea.
Right? Even at sea. So this is, and that's like 200 years after Champlain.
Yeah, I mean, latitude's an easy thing. The Greeks understood latitude.
Yeah.
Because you can use the sky, you can use the stars to figure that out.
Yeah. You can buy longitude, the sky and sell the sky.
When I lived in Africa, when I dated this girl briefly, and she was really into stars and stuff, and so we were standing outside one night, and she's just like, "God, I'm so confused because everything was backwards because you're below the equator."
Yeah,
so you can really use it to isolate your latitude really easily.
I've had friends that have gone to Australia who aren't into the stars, but they say just it looks weird. There's something wrong.
Yeah, it's all upside down. Doesn't make sense. It's all upside down and backwards.
Yeah,
But longitude's really complicated, and it took a timepiece because there's no celestial way of isolating that. But
One of the neat things is though with GPS, now we of course you have to rely less on that, but you still should know how to do it if the GPS goes out in your boat.
Right.
But
this, Jericho.
That's right.
But you got to be able to chart your location without a battery.
But the neat thing is that, because they're so far up in the sky, and because we are closer to a mass down here, those when those calculations are made in your little GPS or your phone, they actually take into account Einstein's idea of us being closer to a mass. So it actually, there are relativity effects to correct for it. They have to, because if they didn't, you'd be off by 4 or 5 meters all the time.
Right.
Which is really quite neat. I just heard that the other day on Are We Alone, the SETI podcast.
But even when you do an analog style with a sextant, you're still off. The potential for you being off is pretty high.
Mm.
And it doesn't matter that much. Like, you don't need it. Usually an average navigator with a sextant will be off by a mile or two, whatever.
Yeah. And you don't need that.
As long as you're going in the right direction, that's what counts.
Well, yeah.
Right? As long as you know where land is, that's all that matters.
I remember during the 91 Gulf War, they were interviewing a tank crew, an M1A1 Abrams tank crew.
Was it H.R. McMaster?
I don't know who it was, but talk like this. Okay. And the reporter from CNN said, so can you tell me about some of the gear you have here? Well, can't tell you about everything, sir. But over here, that's our GPS. That's the global positioning system. And, of course, back then, you couldn't even get GPS if you were a civilian.
Yeah.
But if that goes out, what we have over here, this is our dead reckoning device. This actually tells us compass direction. It keeps track of that and distance. So we can plot a course back home, back to base or whatever.
That means they're wimps if they're dead reckoning with a device.
No, that means they have a lot of backup because they don't want to die. Being a wimp when you're in battle, the idea of battle is not like
a wimp in terms of navigation.
It's like when you play Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 and people yell, "He's using the noob tube," which is the grenade launcher.
Right.
I've often thought to myself, do you think anybody in battle trash talks the other guys? Yeah. Hey, are you using noob tubes?
As he gets blown to Kingdom Come.
Right. The idea is it's the Powell doctrine, right?
Yeah.
We're going to show up with more firepower than you can deal with.
Right, that's the American way, man. That's the American way.
No, that's the way to win wars. It doesn't have to be the American way.
It's the American way.
Don't
send a guy where you can send a grenade or a shell.
No, exactly. Yeah. Well, we've hit, 50 minutes. Maybe we should wrap this one up. I think this has been pretty excellent. I will say that, by the way, we actually now have our own domain.
Yeah.
Right. Tangentialconvergence.com.
And Rebecca, you're wrong about the nation state thing.
Yeah, well, Rebecca thinks that Google acted like a nation state, and she's correct. She's correct.
She is not.
But I thought...
I'll take this up with you online, Rebecca.
I thought really for, mostly for a friend of mine who, when I was on a couple of his podcasts, I was on Tom Merritt's show, Forecast, as I've talked about before, and I had a little wager with Tom, so I just thought I'd play one of my iPhone ringtones for him. That's us winning the gold medal in hockey, Tom. Just saying.
Awesome.
Nice.
Anyway, if you want to get a hold of us, it's tangentialconvergence@gmail.com. We actually now have our own email addresses, but I think I gotta tell you guys what the passwords are,
okay,
so you can log into them.
If you're, we've geotagged Robin and stuck him with RFID tags.
Yeah, he's got RFID tags all over him, which are completely hackable, by the way. Yeah. He's done it at DEF CON like 4 years ago. Yeah.
You can listen to an interview on Thunderbird 6. Carries a phone from 1985.
That's right.
Yeah, which it's
the size of a walkie-talkie.
It's like he's calling in airstrikes in Vietnam.
That's right.
Yeah, that's why he starts all his phone conversations with, you know, fire mission, grid reference.
Great.
On that note, I guess we should watch Caprica.
All right. Good night.
Thanks, everybody.
Night.